Alrighty, we are back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, and it is an absolute honor to welcome veteran wrestler and actor, Mr. Outrageous, Al Burke.
Thank you for having me on your show. I'm excited.
Yeah, I was going through messages and noticed I sent you a request for an interview in like 2016, I think, originally.
Well, and I never got back to you, or...
Well, they were so long back then, I think a lot of people thought it might have been spam or something.
Oh, okay.
Stuff slips through the cracks. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm still busy here in Hollywood, enjoying life and living the dream.
That's very cool. And, of course, I'm sure the weather is wonderful out there. It's starting to get a little better here in Illinois.
Yeah, no, today I actually was driving around in one of my convertibles, and, yeah, it was pretty nice.
That's fantastic. Well, starting out with your pro wrestling career, when did you start and who trained you?
Well, I was trained, if you know the name Eddie Sharkey.
Oh, absolutely. What? From Minnesota?
Yeah, well, a buddy of mine was his head trainer, and Eddie at the time did not have a ring, so they were training on mats, and he's, you know, my buddy told me, and it was, you know, one of the Terminators, Dan Rignati, Riggs. And he says, I'm not going to train you that way. Let me find a ring, and I'll make a deal with them, and, you know, we'll go from there. So we did, he found Jim Mitchell, the old Iron Duke, and he had a really nice ring. So Dan would come over and personally train me there, which was awesome. And, you know, Dan knew me from my, not so much from my boxing days, but my karate days. And then we worked security a lot together, so, you know, he was well aware of my ring presence, so got me in there, and yeah, I was in and out of camp pretty quickly compared to most, so, you know, I was kind of blessed there, but like I said, I had so much ring experience already that, you know, it carried over.
Yeah, some of the best pro wrestlers I found out were fast learners, Kurt Angle, John Cena, to name a couple.
Yes, yes, exactly. And, you know, there's some guys, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, they'll never truly learn. One of the things that Dan did teach me in the very beginning is it's going to take you at least 8 years before you really know and understand this business. And, you know, I had no reason to doubt him, but, boy, when 8 years came, I realized, like, yeah, he was right. I go, now I'm finally starting to get a clue.
Yeah, my problem was is I started when I was 16, and 3 years later, I had soured some people, I guess. You know, starting out, I got to run the roads with guys like Tracy Smothers and Ricky Morton, but you're right. Still, you know, being green and doing things you don't know you're not supposed to do. I did always make sure I shook everyone's hand, which I think a lot of people miss these days, at least on the indie scene.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, the whole business has changed, and I'm happy to have next to nothing to do with it.
That's all right. There always has to be the old war horses. I mean, you guys paved the way for everybody that's doing things today, regardless of how well they may or may not be doing them.
Right, right. I remember I had a Roddy Piper and I were hanging out, and I told him, I said, yeah, basically I was just a jobber in the WWF, and he's like, no, dude, you put us over. You made us look good. You guys were paid to do a job, and most of you did it well. And he goes, I got to thank you for that. And I said, oh, you know, sadly, I never got to work against you. But, you know, I got to work with many of the biggest names in the world. So, you know, I've got no complaints about that.
God, Hot Rod, one of the nicest guys you could ever meet or talk to. Sweetheart.
Yes, he was. He was. And I was very sad. And I was actually with him about a month before he passed. So,
wow.
Yes, that was another sad one. I mean, we've lost many, and
oh, goodness.
Especially coming out of Minnesota with, you know, Kurt Hennig and mm-hmm. guys like that, you know.
Road Warriors, Rick Rude.
Yeah, Ricky. I mean, Ricky and I, we traveled out a lot together. But, yeah, you know, I used to work out at the Road Warriors gym there in Hopkins, you know, the one they owned. Actually, I guess it might have been Golden Valley. But, yeah, you know, and I remember when they came to WWF, they gave, you know, it was a tag team, obviously, but I was one in there, and I took the majority of the hits. But they come up and, like, sorry, dude, you know, we're just coming in and we got to be hot and stiff and everything. I was like, fuck you. Come on, bring it. You know, it was one of the easiest nights and it looked so devastating. But yeah, those guys were true pros and yeah, I miss them both.
Wow, just hearing those names just brings me back to my childhood.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. That makes me feel old. I am. I understand that. But, you know, I wrestled for 37 actual years wow. in this freaking business. So, you know, I got plenty out of it and, you know, no complaints. I mean, I can still walk and talk, well, kind of, and, you know, it's... But, you know, it's one of those things that tomorrow and Wednesday I'm shooting a little spot where I'm actually, some newbie comes into the gym to, you know, for me to teach him how to wrestle. So I'm a little stiff on him, but, you know, it's part of the fun we get to do. And, yeah, so I get to stay alive as Mr. Outrageous and things like that or conventions, but it's cool.
Yeah, you've definitely, have led such an interesting life. How did you become involved with the WWF as enhancement talent or as a journeyman?
Yeah, I was, I had just come, you know, like I said, out of Minnesota, and Tom Stone was the booker for everybody out of the Midwest, basically. But he didn't know the guys in Minnesota like I did, so he put me in charge of that, and I couldn't even tell you how many road trips I did with, you know, the different guys, and probably 25, 30 maybe, you know, so, but yeah, you know, it was kind of fun. I mean, my very first match was against Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I come out to hear the fans go, "You're going to get your ass kicked." You know, yeah, you're kind of right here. You know, I got no clue what the hell I'm doing here. But, you know, Jim was fun to work with. Most of the guys were. I mean, and, yeah, it was just a very awesome experience. And, you know, people were like, "Well, you know, all you did was get your ass kicked." I go, "There I did, yeah." I went other places where it wasn't that way. But I was paying my dues, and I paid off my whole camp, you know, the cost of going to wrestling camp within 6 months.
I mean, you worked...
Just working WWF.
You worked for the Pinnacle. You worked for Vince. I mean, really, there's no place anybody else wants to be in wrestling than to work for the WWF, WWE. And, I mean,
yeah,
you were there.
WWE now, I mean, you know, it's got its issues. Most of the workers have their issues with that. They wish they were back in our era. You know, I tell people, we were old school, but we were cool school. And it was awesome, you know, and people can't live the life that we live anymore because they just don't do it that way, which is kind of sad. I mean, it helped me, you know, even more develop my personalities, my career, I mean, all that just by going to WWF. I mean, I'd get my ass chewed out quite a bit because I ended up getting a fan base. And so I would start talking to them, I'm like, "Burke, get back there, don't do that." I'm like, "Yes, sir." But even during one of the Cactus Jack had a match, and the guy's holding a sign saying "Al Burke's Fan Club."
Wow.
Well, this guy, you know, and he was fairly, I mean, he wasn't that smart to the business back then, but he got more and more. And but yeah, I've actually, and that's on the internet somewhere. I mean, I found it a few times. It's kind of cool, but yeah, you know, it's, you develop the relationships with the fans, which I think is so important, and, you know, being accessible by them so they could come up and actually talk to you or touch you or whatever. And sadly, you know, WWF, now more WWE, doesn't do stuff like that unless they've got a set event. And it's like, okay, you go, you got 1 hour, talk to the fans, 1 hour split, get the hell out of there. You know, it's like, no, we would sit and talk to people, I've actually had, you know, wrestlers come back and say, "You know, you inspired me way back in the day." And I'm like, "Oh, that's kind of cool."
Oh, wow.
So I've had a couple do that. In fact, I was just at a show that I was a color commentator on. And like, kid came, he goes, "Yeah, I wanted to thank you. You probably don't remember me, but I was on one of your shows and you helped me out. And now I'm doing the same thing with kids under me. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Thanks, thanks for stopping by. And yeah, so it's nice to know that even though I was a badass and a heel and whatever, I was still nice enough to inspire people to get into the business. So, I think that's like kind of a cool legacy to leave behind, not just being a jerk or whatever.
No, absolutely. And if it weren't for the WWF, we wouldn't have the UWF.
Ah, the UWF, oh, Herbie.
Great Mr. Electricity, Herb Abrams. how did you become involved with Herb, and what was he like? I mean, people say things, but I think he seemed like he was probably a decent guy.
He was fairly decent, yeah. I mean, his heart was kind of in the right place, let's put it that way. Herb had a lot of issues. He had a lot of skeletons in his closet, drugs, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't a good situation all the time with him, but the fun part was it was a hell of a ride. It's like the wrestling world. It's a freaking carnival from the get-go, and that's what Herb was. I mean, you never knew what to expect, and I've had people writing books on Herb that have contacted me to get my take on some of the stuff. And everybody else had kind of quit. Everybody was fed up with his bullshit. And, a lot of people, one of the problems was getting paid because Herb had his problems and he had to pay for those. And, But anyways, I was there and I ended up becoming in charge of all West Coast operations, and I actually had his film library, I still do. Todd Okerlund, Mean Gene Okerlund's son, has been distributing that for years for me.
Wow.
In fact, we might just be making a deal here in the last month for, a smaller venue, some streaming service. I didn't hear, what happened with it, but I know they contacted me. But anyways, keeping the old Herb Abrams, and like I said, a lot of people have a lot of bad things to say about Herb, and Herb deserves every single one of them, believe me. But, when I got the message from his girlfriend that he had died, it hit me hard. We had traveled all over. I mean, we did the MGM Grand there. We had gone to Israel. We did a tour over in Israel. Wow. Then he took Dr. Death Steve Williams and myself to Hawaii just for vacation and fun. And, again, it was a heck of a ride. You never knew what was going to happen, but it kept you on your toes, let's put it that way.
Yeah, going back to what you said, his heart was in the right place, but sadly his nose wasn't.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it is sad. And like I said, I was upset, and I was also mad. I was very mad at him for doing that. And I had actually talked to Judge Myra in Malibu, where Herb had been put on probation and had to do drug testing, and he had failed it, I believe, twice.
Wow.
Of course. But Herb always had a lawyer that had an angle, and that was the game he was always playing. Well, then when he got caught in New York, and that's when he freaked out, because, he always said, he goes, I can't go to prison. I just can't. That's not a place for a little Jewish boy. I'm like, oh, fuck no. So, and I think that's what ultimately he knew he was going to go. It's kind of like Kerry Von Erich. I mean, he got in trouble, same thing. Knew he was going to go. He committed suicide. I mean, Herb kind of did the same thing, but just a different way.
Yeah, I had a cousin who killed himself in jail. It's unfortunate. Suicide is so sad.
It is. It's sad, but, I guess I understand that because I've known a few people that have done it, more than a few, sadly. But, I guess I understand where they're coming from. I mean, they don't think about what they're leaving behind and who.
Yeah.
But, they're just trying to take away their pain and their agony or whatever they're foreseeing their future as, being. And, it's a tough one. And I think today, even now, it's much more prevalent than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, I think a lot more people are falling victim to the pressures of life, let's just say.
Now, do you think with kind of a new landscape for wrestling in 2023 that the UWF could ever see a comeback?
I tried a little bit, but my heart just wasn't in it. I mean, with Herb dying, like I said, I took it hard. I was mad. I was upset. I was sad. And I just couldn't get it back. I mean, I just, you know, didn't have enough drive in me to do that. So, and without me, I mean, I don't know who else would do it. And, you know, there's a few guys that did work with Herb, but, you know, everybody goes on their way in life, and that's what I did, sadly. I don't know if I could have, you know, if Herb was around, it probably would, because he'd make sure it did. But would it be run well? No. Would it be a disaster? Yes. But would he put on a crazy show? Oh, yeah.
And I think with the landscape as far as streaming is these days, he'd have so many more platforms.
Well, you do, but the sad part is, you know, nobody can make much money that way.
That's true.
And, you know, I've got movies, you know, that I'm marketing right now, but, you know, streaming pays you pennies. And, you know, it costs us hundreds of thousands of dollars to make these, you know. So, in fact, I've got the last UWF show that I'm probably going to put up on some type of streaming. I was thinking of actually putting it into Redbox.
Oh, nice.
Because I think Small Town America is where Redbox is more popular.
Oh, yeah, we love our Redbox.
And that's where I think, you know, it would do, you know, pretty good. I've talked to somebody, you know, about it and just haven't pursued it. But anyways, yeah, it's one of those things, and we'll see. But, you know, there again, you know, the real fire was taken away when Herb died.
I understand.
But, you know, life goes on with or without him.
Yeah, a while back, I think maybe the Facebook page got shut down. There was someone going by Herb Abrams Jr. that was, like, saying that UWF was coming back. But I don't think a lot of people know that Jewish people aren't allowed to have or supposed to have children named after them, and Herb didn't have any kids, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I had heard, I got a couple of notifications about that person, and, you know, there again, you know, it's like, I really don't care, you know, do whatever you want, you know. Doesn't affect me, I don't want any part of it, bye.
Well, transitioning.
I don't think it was really his son, but, you know, anybody can claim anything.
Yeah, that's true. Transitioning on to what you're doing these days and acting, of course, I got to ask the question you've probably been asked a million times in the last 20 years. What was it like working on The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler and the iconic Billy?
It was, it was fun. Let me go back. I mean, I auditioned for this, like we all have to do. And the casting director says, well, good news, bad news. Good news, I'm going to bring you back for a callback. The bad news is it's in 5 hours from now, right back here. Can you come back? So I'm like, yeah, you know, I can do that. And I did. And I actually auditioned with the director. And, you know, he goes, go ahead and invade my space and stuff and, you know, do whatever you have to. Just don't hurt me. So, you know, we did all that, and I think it was 28 days later, I get a call from my agent going, hey, you booked that movie. Like, movie? What movie? You know, normally we hear within days or maybe a week. And this is The Wedding Singer. Oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. So that night, I had a courier bring over the script to me. So I read through it quickly. I'm like, oh, my God, this is really a chick flick. I wasn't sure, you know, the only change was when I auditioned, it was for David Lee Roth, not Billy Idol.
Oh, wow.
So and that switch came somewhere in there, and, you know, and I thought about, like, okay, you know, I was thinking, oh, girls, 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 oh, this is going to be cool. I'm going to like this. And then Billy Idol, I'm like, okay, yeah, I can do that. And when I walked onto the airplane that day, Billy turns to Adam and goes, "Hey, there's your bodyguard." Or no, I'm sorry. Adam turned to Billy and goes, "Hey, there's your bodyguard." And I'm like, wow, this is very cool. And, you know, and my trailer overlooked the clock tower of Back to the Future.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of, iconic. And I'm sitting there, and they brought my contract that I had to fill out, you know, like 10 pages, you know, whatever. And so I'm sitting there, and the tram goes by with all the people on it, the tourists. And, you know, you hear them talking about the clock tower, blah, blah, blah. Ooh, look at that guy. He looks scary. I wonder what he's doing. And I realized I used to be the kid on that tram. And now I'm on the other side. And I'm like, wow, talk about full circle. This is cool. And that studio that we were in, the big building, had two airplanes in it. The one we worked on and a different one. So that's how big the studio, the sound stage was. So, you know, it's like, this is very cool. And, you know, I didn't realize how iconic it was going to be. But it is, it's definitely, I changed my wrestling career. When that came out, the fans instantly turned me into a babyface. I could do nothing wrong. And believe me, I tried because I enjoyed being the bad guy and pissing people off.
Oh, it's so much fun.
It is. And I mean, you know, just, you know, the madder they got, the more I antagonized them. And now the madder, you know, I get at them. They're like, "Hey, no, you're cool. We don't care." So I had to accept that. And I realized, you know, people like Andre and stuff, they turned him baby at the end. I'm like, okay, I guess this is my future now. I'm now a face. But, it was quite the experience. In fact, I still get paid for that movie.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. That's cool.
I mean, I'm not getting a lot of money now, but it's, you know, I get a check for, you know, $100 and some, and hey, that's $100 and something I didn't have yesterday.
That's better than some of the 85 cents checks I've heard people get.
Well, I've gotten checks for one penny. In fact, if you know who Carl Lauer was, he was the
yes.
president of the CAC.
Cauliflower Alley Club, yeah.
Yeah, well, he had gotten me my first movie role in Hollywood, you know, as the wrestler, and he said, "All you got to do is beat up, kidnap, and kill Mexicans in East L.A." Like, hey, I'm a bad guy. Yeah, I can do that. Well, he always joked with me because neither of us ever got paid for it. And, you know, it was a very limited release movie. And I think it's out there now, but, you know, it's like Amazon or something. And it was called Atomic Blue or Zulu Atomico because it was about a Lucha Libre folklore kind of thing, you know, that saved the day. So anyways, I did that. Well, he always joked with me. He says, "Yeah, you never paid me back for that." So I took one of my residual checks with everything on it, framed it, and gave it to him at the CAC one year. And I go, "Don't spend it all in one place there, Kyle."
I was just going to say it would be worth it enough for me to just frame it and have it as a keepsake of the start of my, you know, dreams and career.
Yeah. No, I'm still an active member of the CAC over there, and now it's in Vegas. And, yeah, it's, back to the wrestling stuff, you know, it's great for all of us to get together. We see
people
we haven't traveled with in years. So, and now I guess I'm up for an award. It's called the Reel Award. It's R-E-E-L, you know, for movie reel. It turned out, you know, the two top people that have gotten awards there, the Reel Award, was Judo Jean LaBelle, who had approximately 285 credits, I think, on IMDb.
Oh, yeah, long time actor.
Yeah, oh, yeah, long time. And then Rowdy Roddy Piper was number two.
Oh, nice.
And I think he had like 175 credits. You know, very respectable. Well, I'm sitting right now at like 230-something, almost 240, not counting my stunt credits. So I'm like, oh, I guess I'm up here with the big boys. God, that's kind of cool. I mean, I'd never thought of it that way, but holy crap, yeah. I mean, if I've got more credits than Rowdy Roddy Piper and everybody else, you know, after that, other than Gene LaBelle has less than me, cool.
I would.
So anyways, that's possibly coming this fall.
Very cool. I would feel remiss if I did not mention my longtime friend of nearly a decade now, wow, Ron Fitzgerald. I was happy to see you guys had worked together.
Yes, we have on quite a few occasions, and Ron and I have actually talked that we should make a movie where him and I are in competition with each other, killing people just for fun. And who has a better kill?
Oh, that would be
amazing.
But yeah,
Ron and I have done a few things together, and it's always been a pleasure. And I haven't seen him now in years. And I actually went back and his movie, I can't remember the name right off the top of my head, but yeah, they had me come in, and I was the bodyguard in that one. And
Dark Realm?
Pardon?
Dark Realm?
Yes, Dark Realm. Thank you. So yeah, but yeah, it's been fun, and you know, that's one of the things, whether it's wrestling or acting, you get to meet people, and you may not see them again for, you know, a year, 5 years, 10 years, but somewhere, you know, the circle a lot of times comes back around, and it's just cool.
Well, absolutely. And my last question I also wanted to bring up was, you got to work with Eminem on the song Without
Me.
Oh, a couple of times. Cool.
Yeah, the first time it was his comeback video, which was MTV Music Video of the Year. I don't remember which year it was, but that was Without Me. And I had a couple of spots in that video, and the second one I was actually punching him, but he said I was too intimidating, so he had me punch the sumo guy, and they superimposed his face on there. Oh, wait. So, yeah, no, that was the first one, yeah. Trying to think. Yeah, I'm getting mixed up now. I've done between probably 7, 8, maybe close to 900 music videos now.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's been quite a run. But, no, you know, the first one, you could tell from his music and stuff Without Me that he was definitely had issues and things like that. And, you know, the last time I worked with him, which was a couple of years, like 3-4 years later, was Ass Like That, where I was the cop that chased him through 4 different scenes.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, there again, that was kind of fun. I was the white cop. There was a black cop. Unfortunately, it was shot so, you know, so dark that the poor black guy, you could barely even see him.
Oh, goodness.
You know, but, you know, that was, you know, I was there to do my job, and that's what I did.
That's
because,
just bad shooting.
Well, I mean, it is very difficult. If people understand photography or filmmaking at all, it's a completely different lighting setup for a person of color than it is for, you know, a white boy like me.
Oh, okay.
You know, especially, you know, I've got too much Irish in me, so I'm, you know, other than getting some sun, I'm pretty pasty white.
I'm Scottish. I'm the same way.
Yeah. So, you know, to light me, I mean, I would be glowing when the black eye looked perfect. You know, and it could be black, it could be Indian, it could be, you know, a darker skin Mexican. I mean, it, you know, whatever the darker skin is, it just is a completely different lighting setup. And that's why a lot of times they don't like to do it in the dark. You know, if you're in the daylight, that's much easier. So, but anyways, no, it was, you know, that was the second one, Ass Like That. And yeah, that was kind of fun. And it was nice to be invited back and, yeah, and doing all that. So that was cool. I mean, the first one I ended up working on 2 days for the 2 different parts to come back to, you know, punch, you know, the sumo guy when it's Eminem. But, you know, it's one of those things. And that day, I think I was there for, or myself and the sumo guy, 17 or 18 hours.
Wow.
Before we filmed for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds like Hollywood.
But the nice part is that check was huge.
Oh, I bet.
Right, sure. I mean, we kept laughing. It's like, oh, God, we're into overtime now. Oh, we're into double time or time and a half. Now we're double time. Oh, my God, we're coming up like golden time. So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, our business, you can't take it. You know, it's like, oh, I need to get out there and work right now, because it doesn't work that way very often.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can't do it, you need to find another job, because, you know, it does require a lot of sitting around sometimes.
Sit around, hurry up and wait.
A lot of times, yeah. I mean, I'm lucky I'm with a group where we have police cars, police motorcycles, ambulance, and a fire engine, a real fire engine. And when we go out, normally it's either we're booked on 4 hours or 8 hours. Or the YouTubers are actually 3 hours. They have to get us done quicker. But we show up, you shoot us, we're gone.
Huh.
So that's pretty nice, and we're all liking that, because, you know, we'll argue over the 3 and 4 hour one rather than sitting around for 8. You know, granted, you're getting more money, but it's like, no, I'd rather go home.
Yeah. Well, Al, thank you so much for joining me. I hope I didn't take too much of your time.
No, not a problem. Good talking to you, and maybe we'll do it again.
Absolutely. I'm sure in all the great things you've done, I could figure out a lot more to discuss.
Not a problem. You know, let me know, and I'll be happy to come back, and you know, we'll chat again.
All righty. Well, thank you very much again, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Take care, and thanks to all the fans out there.
All righty. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, guys. Big thanks to Al Burke. Man, WWF, UWF, The Wedding Singer, Billy Idol. We didn't even talk about Cradle to the Grave. I mean, this guy has done so many cool things in his career. And it's hard for me to believe that in my career with Cloverleaf Radio, that we have just reached 15 years. Well, not just. It was March 5th. But 15 years. And this is the first show that I've done in 2023. Because I've been taking off the winter. It just kind of seems like after I do so many shows in a year, I just kind of get burnt out. And just going to take some time off and get back to where I really love it. And bring you guys some more great interviews. So check out Al Burke. He's on Facebook. I meant to ask him to plug his website. I usually try to get everybody to plug their stuff. But I felt bad quoting him a certain time and then going half an hour. But a very nice talk. Alrighty, guys. No show scheduled at the moment. But I do have someone I'm talking with that just emailed me back that I requested a year ago. She just now saw my email. So it's kind of fun when things like that happen. We will see you when we see you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.
Hey, this is Wally Wingard from Family Guy, and you're listening to Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by James McLovin Falcon and Michael Porter.
Hop, 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 hop.